Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry with Andrea Bernstein. A lot in Barack Obama's speech from Cairo this morning. You might call this his literal, quite literal, shout-out to the Arab world.
I'm also proud to carry with me the goodwill of the American people and a greeting of peace from Muslim communities in my country. Assalamu alaikum.
Just one of the applause lines as Barack Obama spoke to a full house at Cairo University. Professor Peter Ahn, director of the Middle East Studies program at Columbia University, is with us. Also, Noah Feldman, professor of law at Harvard, author of The Fall and Rise of the Islamic State. Peter Ahn, how challenging is it for Barack Obama to mix these kinds of symbolisms, which does seem to be something that we haven't seen a lot of from American presidents, and these specific programmatic policy issues that he has to address?
There's no doubt that the next stage has to be more concrete policy outlines, I think, in terms of the Arab-Israeli crisis, but more broadly in engaging the Muslim world in joining us in combating terrorism.
These little touches of Arabic that he sort of peppered through his speech, we've been talking about how not every Muslim in the world is observant. But do you think by making these references, he creates a comfort zone? For example, you know, when Obama speaks to a Jewish audience, he references the Torah, for example, and while many Jews are not practicing, that makes him feel kind of good. Is that effect, do you think?
You know, it's interesting. I think previous presidents have tried it and not done it very well. He has a certain credibility in doing this, which I think begins to build these cultural links.
Mm. Noah, do you buy that? What's the point at which it becomes patronizing?
I don't think he crossed the patronizing line, but there were a few tiny missteps. He said, in a very unusual mispronunciation, instead of saying hijab for the Muslim headscarf, he said hajib, which is just a he's just misreading the teleprompter. It shows you, though he is very comfortable, and he always makes a big effort to speak with a local accent wherever he is. Even President Obama is not perfect.
Right. Well, what do you make of the fairly declarative statement that the U.S. opposes settlements in the occupied territories and that they must stop? It also got a big applause line, Noah.
Well, it's in the roadmap, President Bush's roadmap, and I think it's a very sensible and a correct policy, but it's also been our policy. He's referring specifically to a dispute that he's been having with the Israelis over the last week about whether what Prime Minister Netanyahu calls quote-unquote natural growth within the settlements is permissible, and the Israelis are saying that President Bush implicitly approved this, and President Obama's been saying that's ridiculous, whatever he did, it's not in the roadmap and we don't approve of it. So I think that was one of the reasons that got that applause. The audience is very sophisticated and they know about this debate.
Well, probably a little less applause going on in Israel as Barack Obama said this.
At the same time, Israelis must acknowledge that just as Israel's right to exist cannot be denied, neither can Palestine's. The United States does not accept the legitimacy of continued Israeli settlements.
Ethan Bronner joins us now, reporter for The New York Times, our partner from Jerusalem, Israel. There are people in Israel, actually, who would applaud that line. What's your general reaction to both that statement and elsewhere in the speech that referred to the Arab-Israeli conflict?
Hello, John. I can't yet tell you how Israelis are reacting because it's so soon after the talk. I mean, my own sense is that he has a rare ability to articulate the strong feelings of each side, which is unusual. Normally, when people talk about the conflict, they'll say there was a massacre in Gaza. They'll say the poor people in Sderot are under rocket attack. They're unable to really sort of touch the jugular of each side's feelings, and I think he did so. Don't forget, before he spoke about an end to settlements, he talked with great feeling about the Holocaust, about Jewish history, about a Jewish homeland here. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people here who have been very moved by that.
I was wondering about that reference to Buchenwald and the extent to which sort of the emotional power of that moment, or a line that he said to no applause in Egypt when he was talking about 9/11 being a fact, not an opinion. Do these kinds of sort of emotional resonances soften the sort of policy blow of, hey, you guys need to live together?
Well, that's certainly his aim. I mean, that's sort of the whole notion he's put forward now of let's be honest, let's stop talking in one way in public and another way in private. When Noah Feldman just spoke about a sort of tacit agreement between the United States and Israel on settlement growth, despite a public declaration of a settlement freeze. It really, he's talking about that sort of thing. It wasn't written down. No one knew. But according to the Israelis and some American officials, a freeze meant yes, except for X, Y, and Z. He's saying no more of that. We're going to talk out loud the same way we're talking privately. And we need to accept certain broad principles. It's hard to know how it's going to go down. But it's the sort of thing which is very American, the idea that somehow one can make all these things work and line everything up and move forward into a brighter future.
Well, Ethan Bronner, that's a really key point, it seems to me, and it got a big applause line. Peter Ahn, I wonder if you can get a reaction to that. He seems to be, by saying we're going to talk publicly the same way we talk privately, that speaks directly to the sense, I think, of paranoia throughout the Middle East that there's some secret thing going on behind the scenes. I mean, that's something that I observed when I lived in Israel for many years. Peter?
No, absolutely. I think there's a sense of rebuilding some level of credibility, that there isn't going to be this kind of disconnect between public discourse and what we're really doing.
But Ethan, I mean, obviously American presidents and secretaries of states have been talking about these kinds of things. I'm wondering whether you think the speech today, given the way that Obama sort of, you know, reached out his hand and sort of bowed graciously to many different communities in the world, that the conversation will change in Jerusalem where you are, you know, based on what you know from reporting there?
I mean, the conversation here is being forced to change not so much by this speech, but by the encounters between this administration and the Netanyahu government. There is unquestionable kind of a concrete wall that this government is hitting with the Americans with regard to things that this administration thinks has to change, like settlements in particular. So I think, I mean, the question is what's going to happen to this government, and there is this weird, sad irony that at a time when there is an American government with the power internally and externally to try to do something, is probably the least promising time in the last 20 years from the point of view of either the Israelis or the Palestinians to actually make it work. So it will be an interesting year ahead of us.
Well, there's more to say about this. Ethan Bronner, stay with us, won't you? He's a reporter for our partner, the New York Times. We're also talking with Professor Peter Ahn, director of the Middle East Studies Program at Columbia University, and Noah Feldman, professor of law at Harvard. We're going to get some of the rest of the news from Femi Oke when we come back and then continue our discussion. Barack Obama speaking from Cairo, Egypt. He talked about all kinds of things. We'll expand beyond the Arab-Israeli conflict when we come back. Stay with us on The Takeaway.